Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking home improvement on the show today and focusing in a bit on the importance of getting windows and siding installed correctly. John Freiberger, our guest. John's a Wisconsin registered home inspector. He has more than four decades of home improvement experience. So I hope you'll join in. What home improvement questions do you have? Love to hear from you. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Glad to be back, and glad to be back in the studio where I can actually see your smiling face.
Well, the same goes for me. It's really great to have you here in the studio with me. And you were telling me before the show that there have been lots of issues recently in recent years on siding installation. You would think it would be not all that difficult if you follow. I mean, there must be a set of instructions and so forth, but what goes wrong?
Well, you're right, Larry. There is a set of instructions. I think every program I've been on with you, I tell our consumers out there to download the instructions and show them to the contractor because the contractor's never seen them before. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that saying has been proving itself. Part of the problem is, you know, when I was a kid, everything was made out of wood. You know, yeah. It was wood or it was brick or it was concrete. It was, you know, it was something that we'd been building with literally for 2,000 years. And we pretty much knew how to do it. But now we've got these new manufactured materials, and they react very differently than wood did with both water and with heat. And what was intuitive with wood is not intuitive with Hardy Plank or with LP SmartSide. And that is where part of our problem is. The other problem we have, Larry, is that the people my age have all retired. And yeah. A lot of the unions are gone. And I don't know who's training. Well, I do know who's training. Nobody. And that is part of our problem. We have people coming in and doing installation work who do not have the background that my dad had in construction, my grandfather, my Uncle Bill.
Yeah.
So the knowledge base is gone, and no one has really educated themselves. And actually, Larry, it's really pretty easy to educate yourself. You simply download the instructions.
Yeah, and the instructions are there, so why aren't they used? Mostly because we always did it this way, so this is the way we're going to do it, or what?
What I see, Larry, is people are using their intuition. So they're putting on a manufactured trim or a manufactured siding, and then they're caulking all of the joints real tight. Because that makes sense, right? It's going to shed the water. Well, that's not what the instructions say. The instructions say if water gets behind this stuff because it is a manufactured product, it used to be wood or it used to be cement powder, if water sits there at all or gets behind it and can't get out, it's going to deteriorate. So when we caulk the surfaces, instead of leaving the gaps and the flashings that the instructions ask for, we're trapping moisture. And then these materials, because they are composites, are going to come apart. So people are using their intuition, and their intuition happens to be wrong. What we have to do is we have to flash, and we have to leave air gaps and let the water come out. So, Larry, there's two types of systems in the world, really. There's one called a barrier system, and a boat hull is a good example of a barrier system.
Sure.
Nothing goes in, nothing goes out, right? It is just a barrier. The other thing is a rain screen. So the screen on your screen porch is a rain screen. Rain hits it. Most of it runs down the outside of the screen. Some of it goes through. And we all know that we have the porch fort sloped because the water comes through the rain and it runs outside, right?
Yeah.
Well, modern siding is a rain screen. It's not a barrier. So what we have to do is every time we have a window header, rather than the old days with the wood where we caulked it, nowadays, we have to put in a Z flashing. We have to leave either, depending upon the manufacturer, a quarter inch to 3/8 inch gap. And that gap is there so that the water can actually drain out and the air can get in and dry it. So it completely has changed. We've gone from the boat hull to the screen door.
But now, you know, as I am thinking about this, is it doesn't seem to me that it'd be a lot of extra work to do it the right way.
It actually is less work, Larry.
That's what I'm thinking.
It is. Now, one thing, like, you put a nice big corner on a house, right? So you take LP Smart Side trim and you cut it both pieces at 45 degrees and you put it together. Well, that's wrong. Because what happens is those 45s open up and you can't seal them. So you're supposed to just dead bottom, which is much easier. It takes less time. So to do it right actually is easier than to do it wrong. And most of the time I see they've ripped these corner pieces because that's what they did with the cedar and the pine and the redwood that was done 30 years ago. And that's what's intuitive. And the problem with this stuff is not natural, it's science. And science isn't necessarily intuitive, as I'm sure many of your guests have told you. And so we've got to read the instructions.
So what should the homeowner know before they hire a contractor to do the siding?
Well, the first thing we want to do is we want to investigate our products. Now, some people can still afford wood, and there is still nothing in the world better than old-fashioned redwood and cedar. And, Larry, I just found out yesterday redwood is making a comeback. The stuff that was planted in the 40s and 50s is ready to be harvested, and I've got a contractor call me yesterday saying he's switching a lot of cedar to redwood because the redwood's cheaper. And for you and I, that's hard to believe because the redwood we thought was gone by 1960. But, you know, wood is so forgiving, and like I said, we've used it for 2,000 years. So people have to decide what they want. Now, things like LP Smart Side, which is basically ground-up wood, you know, it's sawdust that is glued together, and then they put an embossed wood pattern on it. PVC, like AZEK, which is actually, it's the same stuff that your waste pipes, plumbing waste pipes are made out. So it's never going to rot, is it?
No.
So if you're down where you've got some real problems with clearance to grade and things, something like AZEK may, or other PVC products, Trex products, will really work. And then there's the cementous products. I think Hardy, the Hardy Plank lap siding is probably the most popular. We see that a lot. The nice thing about it is you can use it in the middle of the city because concrete doesn't burn, whereas other things do. But they each have a slightly different look. They are all artificial. The Hardy tends to be smooth. The LP and some of the others have a wood grain in them. So you've got to figure out what you want, and then the next thing you do is you simply go online, you type in LP Smart Side instructions, and in something like 15 seconds, you are going to have them. And you simply read them. And as I said, you print two copies and you hand one to the contractor. The problem, Larry, when it's put on wrong, and if this stuff comes apart, you have no warranty. Because all these instructions have in the bold print, there's no warranty if this is put on wrong. So you need to get the material that's going to work for you aesthetically. You need to understand how it's going to work, and then you need to talk to your contractor.
And the contractor needs to follow. But if siding fails, then you have to put – you're responsible for a replacement or what?
Larry, as I mentioned before the program, I'm up to 40 cases right now, and half of those are siding and masonry being installed incorrectly. And it really gets to be a problem because once we start tearing things off of houses to refit them, what have we done to the Tyvek or the tar paper or the water-resistant barrier that was in back? Well, we've torn holes in it. Now we're putting more nails in. So it's not like there is any simple cure. It always ends up being heartache, not only for the homeowner, but, I mean, one reason I love doing this program is I don't only want to help our listeners who are homeowners. I want to help our listeners who are contractors. And I tell every contractor, you go to my website, download stuff, and if you have questions, you call me, and I will not charge you. I want to see things done right.
And you had some publications, actually, that you emailed me or sent, shot over to me that explain a lot of this.
Right, and they're pretty simple, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're very
simple. Pretty straightforward.
And they're on our website, our Freiberg Consulting or Educated Homeowner websites. You just go to the folder that says, what does it say? It says, I think it says siding and exterior finishes. You click on it and it's there. But, you know, I don't update that website as often as I should, Larry. And so, like, the Hardy Plank I've got in front of me right now is April 2018. There may be a
new one.
There may be a May 2020 up there. So
yeah.
Go to, until I get the website updated, just go right to Hardy or to LP or to AZEC or whoever else you're looking at and get the instructions.
Jerry in Mequon has a different question for us, I think relating to windows. Jerry, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Wonderful to talk to you. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My question is, I live in a house that was built in the mid-60s and still has the original windows.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they're not as thermally tight as they should be, plus the fact that they're wood, so they're starting to show their age. And I would like some advice on how to find someone to put new windows in for me.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, do you know the brand of the windows that are in your house?
Oh, boy. I do not.
That's okay. There are some windows. People call me and they say, I've got ROW windows in my house from 1954, and I need to change them out. And I go, no, you don't. They're weather stripping superior to most of what you buy today. And with a storm on, it's an R2 window, and a brand new vinyl window is an R2 window. Why would you change those out? So the first thing to really look at, Jerry, is try to get an assessment of the quality of the issue. Look at the weather stripping. Now, a lot of old houses, like mine, had no weather stripping. I don't think it had been invented when my house was built. And so sometimes we'll be adding weather stripping, but we'll find a lot of windows from the 50s and 60s that were really well constructed. And if they have metal weather stripping, or if they have what I call rabbeted weather stripping, where there's actually a groove in the sash, so there's wood surrounding a raised area of the weather stripping, some of those windows are surprisingly tight. So evaluate what you have first. Now, as far as windows, what I have tended to do is to go to window specialists, and I would talk to the window dealer. If you're gonna buy them from Anderson or from Pella or Marvin, I would talk to Mr. Smith at Marvin over there and wherever it is near Mequon and say, who's good? Who do you recommend? Not the cheapest, but who's actually good? And they often are going to know people who have been in business for 20 or 30 years. So they've survived by doing the right thing. So I think that is a good way to start. Advertising, I don't believe at all. In fact, as busy as we are right now, if I see a company's got a full-page ad in the local paper, I go, that's really bad news. Why would they not have enough work in this particular environment that they have to advertise? So go to the expert who's going to be your window salesperson at a specialized window place, not a big box store, and ask them who they might recommend. Then, you know, it's a good idea to at least talk to three different men or women who are doing the installation, and they'll have slightly different ideas. Does that help, Jerry?
And if
can I ask one more quick question?
Sure.
Do you have an opinion about interior storm windows?
Maybe. The question is sealing them. They have to really be airtight, because otherwise what happens is if air gets past them, then we end up with a lot of condensation on the actual windows, because it's now cooler in there, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what used to be the warm interior is now sort of a coolish, not quite interior, beyond the storm. So it's difficult to put them on. Now, Jerry, I think you'll hear Larry and I every single program say energy audit. You can do a blower door test on your house and see how much those windows are actually leaking. And it could be that maybe we just need some edge sealing or something, and that the existing ones with some refinishing and things can be salvaged, assuming the weather stripping is good and the other things I said. So really investigate. New windows are expensive.
Yeah.
Even cheap new windows are expensive. Good new windows are ungodly expensive. So spending $500 or $1,000 and doing some investigation before you spend $20,000 to $40,000 replacing windows, I think, is probably good advice.
And to do that, to get that energy audit?
I think we can still go to Focus on Energy
yes.
and get people in your local area. And We can do a blower door test any time of year. Thermal imaging is best done in the middle of winter because when you've got zero outside, 75 inside, we really get some beautiful pictures for thermal imaging. But if you're just at this point worried about the windows, a blower door test, depressurizing the house to 50 pascals and use a smoke candle. You can actually measure how leaky your house is right down to the cubic foot per minute. It puts some science behind your decisions, Jerry.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Jerry, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest, Wisconsin registered home inspector and the owner of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments. We've dealt a bit with siding and with windows, but you may have questions about those or other questions. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. The U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol plans a hearing tonight, and you can join us for live NPR coverage starting at 7 o'clock. The committee says the hearing will present previously unseen material documenting January 6th, receive witness testimony, preview additional hearings, and provide the American people a summary of its finding. That's NPR coverage tonight at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. And right now, if you have a question about your home, and we're talking home improvements with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, our lines are pretty well filled, but the number is 800-642-1234. You can email to ideas@WPR.org. Craig and Stevens Point, we'll go to you now. Craig, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a two-story 1940s construction that had no insulation, and we're told it's balloon framed. Not sure what that exactly means. Numerous years ago, we retrofitted the siding with rigid foam board for some insulation value and then cement siding. Wondering, with balloon framing construction, what are the concerns with insulating and or that kind of siding, cement siding, if any? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the cement siding, what I'd suggest you do is go to the James Hardy website and take a look at it, and then you can download that, print it, and go look at it. Now, it could be you've got CertainTeed weather boards or from some other manufacturer where they're no longer made. But the Hardy stuff is a good instruction for, I think, any cementous siding. So that would help you in that. Now, balloon framing basically means that way back then, we had long wood. So rather than modern construction, which is called deck on deck, so you're using 8-foot or 9-foot studs, and then you're putting a floor on top of it and then more 8 or 9-foot studs. The balloon framing, you framed up a wall that might be 20 feet high, and you put the whole thing up, and then the floors were often just nailed or slightly inset to hold up the second floor. Now, what's nice about that, if you're going to insulate, you can insulate the entire stud cavity from top to bottom because it's open. So it can actually make it a lot easier. But the thing we've got to think about when we insulate an older house, and 1940s is an older house, is that once we insulate, we are changing the thermal characteristics of that wall, and we are changing where the dew point happens. Because right now, it's happening pretty far out. In fact, the dew point may not even be inside the wall. The wall may be so warm. But if we move that dew point into the point where we're getting condensation inside that wall, we could end up with some issues. Now, if you had a historic house in a historic district, they would say, Craig, you can't insulate it unless you put a vapor-resistant barrier on the entire house. And that can be done actually with paint as long as you air seal. So do a little bit of research on vapor barriers. And the other thing, vapor, of course, we'll go through vapor permeable material, but if you've got a whole lot of leaks, say, around the windows and things where inside air is getting into the walls, you probably want to get those sealed as well. So again, a blower door test is going to give you a lot of useful information. So perhaps, again, go to Focus on Energy and talk to an energy analyst and then ask them what happens to condensation inside the wall when I insulate this house.
Yeah. And you'll get a lot of recommendations from the folks that do the blower door tests and that sort of thing.
That's right. And I think, Larry, a lot of them will give you a return on investment, too. I mean, they're going to say if you spend X dollars insulating this house, you're going to save X dollars on your utility bill. So, again, it puts a little bit of science behind your decisions.
Craig, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Brad in Madison, your turn. Hi, Brad.
Hi. Hi, John. Thank you for all your good advice. I've got a question about a replacement window. I live in an older home. 1872 it was constructed. Finally, the window that looks out on a gorgeous view needed to be replaced. And the landlord arranged for that to be done. And now one of the four panes has developed a little haze. I think it's leaking and developing a little condensation inside.
Mm-hmm.
The weathering's removed all the information from the window. I don't know who made it. I don't know how to get that repaired.
Okay. And how old is this window, Brad?
Oh, it's maybe 3 to 5 years old.
Okay. So it probably almost certainly has a warranty on it. So can you reach out to the landlord and find out where he got it?
He lives next door. He doesn't keep those kinds of records. I've already asked him, and it was installed very economically.
Well, if you want to find out who made a window, sometimes it's on the hardware and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it is on the glides. What you often find is a National Fenestration Council sticker, and that's just telling you that it meets that particular, or an ANSI standard, which doesn't help at all. The other thing you can do is look in the corners of the glass, because it sounds like this is a thermal pane that's lost the seal. And sometimes, like I know Anderson and Pella, the major manufacturers, actually have in the corner of the glass the manufacturer a code that can tell you when it was made and what type of glass it is, like whether it's a sunscreen or whatever. So look at that first. If their warranty just isn't an issue, give a call in Madison, probably to Martin Glass, though there are some others as well. They'll come out, remove the stop, put in a new sealed unit, and basically what you've got is a sealed unit fail. Fairly easy and not terribly expensive to fix.
Yeah. Martin Glass does a nice job, too. I'm in my neighborhood, and they've done some work for me. So there you go, Brad. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Perry in Bailey's Harbor, it's your turn. Hi, Perry.
Hi there. Enjoying the show. You may have already covered this, but I'm in the middle of a project and on my way to pick up materials later today. And what I'm doing is replacing the vertical trim around a garage door. And this is about 50 years old trim that's cedar, and it's a bit rotten at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to replace that. But I was just wondering if you have any advice. I was thinking about getting the LP Smart Side, and I tested the stain adheres to that pre-primed stuff pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure what stuff I can get yet. Is that roughly equivalent to cedar in terms of rot resistant if you treat the ends okay?
You are correct, Perry, and treating the ends is really, really important. Now, if you use LP Smart Side trim, you have to stop the trim 1 inch above your driveway. Now, the cedar, usually people will go down to 3/8 of an inch. The other product that's out there, but you'd have to test it with your stain, is this AZEK, this PVC. It has a wood grain, and it takes most stains. And the AZEK is never going to decay and can be dead tight to the concrete.
Hmm.
Because, as I said, it's PVC. It's the same thing as the sewer pipes in your house. So it is very, very decay-resistant. Looks as much like wood as LP does. It might be slightly more expensive.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good solution, too.
Well, yeah. The other thing is the AZEK is a little bit tougher. LP, you know, if you whack it with a car door, or the kids skid the bike across it, you can disrupt the surface, because it is, you know, it's basically sawdust glued together. The AZEK is something that is really pretty hollow, pretty solid, so it is more resistant to abrasion and impact.
Yeah, there you go, Perry. Appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Let's turn to Richard in Two Rivers. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I always think I can do more than I can. And I put new windows in my house, and everything worked out good, except for the bigger window in the front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cold, and I was in a rush, and it didn't fit quite right. And I put it in anyways, and I siliconed it, and I nailed the flashings to it. And now I can see that the... especially the right side, I can't lift the window pane up. Most of the other windows were horizontal, so they slide easily. Mm-hmm. But I can't get those windows up. Do I have to pull that back out and start all over? And if I do, do I have to take all the nails out and re-silicone it?
The first thing to do, Richard, is to take off casing, either the interior or the exterior or both. Now, did you use shims on that window?
It would be the exterior because, I mean, it's not, the house isn't sided yet. So, I mean, I can get to it.
Oh, good, good. Okay. But did you use any shims on the side of the window?
No, that's what I should have done.
No, not necessarily. What we often find is if you have an overdriven shim, it warps the side jamb of the window, and then the windows won't go up and down. So basically, you've got some pressure in there. Now, did you foam that, or you said you used silicone caulk? You didn't use any foam on that. Is that
all
right?
All I did was silicone it, and I pressed it into place, and I nailed it,
mm-hmm.
and everything slid up. I thought I had it squared,
mm-hmm.
and everything went up and down, and then now it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a really hard one to diagnose on the radio, Richard. I think you're going to have to look at it and see if we do have the rough jam pushing on the window. And if you do, that's a sort of a difficult one to access. But it sounds like you've had a slight bit of movement there since installation. If there is any flexibility in that window, you might put a wood shim, and you got to use not a cedar shim, but I mean a pine shim, a hard pine shim, top and bottom where the rails come across, and tap those lightly and see if that maybe just reduces the pressure on the middle of the jam so that it'll work again. It's got at least a 15% chance of working, but it's real easy to do. So if it doesn't work, it's not like you've lost a lot. Rather than take an entire window out and then shave down the rough, the rough stud or something, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, there you go, Richard. Good luck with that. Appreciate it very much. Fred in Marshall, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hey, hi guys. How's it going today?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have been trying to come up with a plan for enclosing the area underneath the deck so I could divert the rainwater away and have a dry space below the deck. I know there's systems out there, but I saw a do-it-yourself video where the fellow used corrugated roofing and pitched it away from the house to a gutter,
mm-hmm.
and then ran it down. And so they created the dry space underneath, you know, for a patio. But if I do that, am I creating too high of a moisture area in the joist area where there's going to be less air circulation?
Possibly. It depends upon what you've got as far as clearance at the upper end. I would think that if you've got 6 inches of clearance at the upper end, you really should be fine. Because I'm assuming this is treated wood that is supporting it, not untreated wood.
Yeah, it's 2x8 pre-treated.
Right. They are able to take a certain amount of moisture. It's going to shorten the life maybe by, you know, instead of 40 years, you're going to get 38. But I don't think I'd worry about that too much. But that sounds like a system that could indeed work. It's sometimes, it's depending on the size of the deck, you just can't get in there and shovel and compact gravel and slope it very easily.
Yeah, there you go, Fred. Good luck with that. Appreciate it. Well, Dave in Brookfield, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Within the last year, I've moved into a new condo development, a ranch-style condo. And talking with people that have been here, I don't think the oldest condo is more than 2 years old. But in winter, they have a lot of condensation on their windows, and where it actually runs down the windows and puddles up on the sill, on the interior.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought that up to the association, and they're saying, well, it's new construction. Things are so much tighter, and there's a lot of moisture in all the materials used in the condo. So they've recommended running a dehumidifier upstairs, and I also run a second one down in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if it's the quality of the window or what is the issue, or if it's something that is just naturally going to happen.
Do you know the brand of the windows?
You know, I'm going to walk over to them right now. I don't really know the brand.
I'm going to guess it's a vinyl window, and it maybe doesn't have any brand on it at all.
Yes, you're correct. It is a vinyl window.
Right. That's what we usually find in condos. It's usually the cheapest of the cheap. So usually it's an R2 window. So you are going to get, when the window temperature hits, I've got a chart that tells me all this, but you are going to get a lot of condensation off in an expensive window. Now, your interior humidity should be between 40 and 45% in the winter. What I would do is go to the hardware store, just get a little cheap humidistat. You can stick on the wall, see what it is. Certainly, basements should always be dehumidified. Set the dehumidifier in the basement between 40 and 45 and see what happens. You should not be getting a lot of water vapor out of the wood or the concrete at this point. You've been there for 2 years. You've been through a winter. Things tend to dry pretty well in the winter. You need to make sure that your bath fans are correctly vented to the exterior and draw enough air. You need to make sure that the dryer, unless it's a condensing dryer, which has its own problems, is indeed vented to the exterior. But the first thing to do is to start measuring your humidity. If you've got humidity in the house 55, 60, 65%, then we've got to locate that moisture and we've got to get rid of it. One way of getting rid of the moisture is a dehumidifier, a second, which improves air quality, is an air-to-air heat exchanger, or also called a heat recovery ventilation unit. So a little bit of science first. Let's get some measurements, see what your humidity is. And if you email me, I can send you the chart I'm referring to as to when you're going to get condensation on your windows, assuming it's like an R2 window. And then you can, once you know what your humidity is, you can decide whether you need to treat that humidity, because you're not going to change out all these windows. That's way too expensive.
Yeah. And your email address
is frei@chorus, like a group of singers, .net, frei@chorus.net.
frei@chorus.net. Dave, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. By the way, you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jack in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi, I have a question. So I'm working on a historic house, and it was built in 1914, and I'm repairing and restoring sash cords. So on this one window, that's actually four windows in the living room, when I opened up the door jamb, I saw two weights for four windows, and they had pulley systems, and I've never seen this before. And I'm wondering if this is a shared weight system, or if maybe two of the other counterweights for the sash fell down into the basement. It's a real head-scratcher for me.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, you should still see rope fragments, even if the weights have fallen. So, pretty hard one to diagnose. So, you've got how many sashes altogether, Jack?
Four
sashes
altogether.
And you have just two weights left instead of four?
On two of the jams, there's two weights per jam. And then on the very edge of the windows on either side, on the very edge, there's two weights. So there's eight weights.
Eight weights. Together. Okay. It could be that they didn't have – it could be that the sashes were too big for the original weights, so they doubled the weights. That's entirely possible. I mean, weights came in all kinds of sizes. I salvage a bunch of them because every now and then I've got to repair an old window. And I've got some window weights that are 2 feet long. Things weigh like 30 pounds. So it could be that they just did not have enough weight to counterbalance the weight of the sash. That's all I can think of.
That makes that makes some sense. Jack, is that make sense to you?
Yeah, looking at it, it's just a real head-scratcher because they have pulleys. So I'm thinking it could be maybe a shared weight system where two of the windows share a common weight.
That's very unlikely because when that sash moves, what would happen to the weight on the other window? So you could try sending me a picture of it. If you can get decent pictures, I can look at it. I'm not sure I can analyze it. And you know, Madison does have a couple of historic window specialists, and you could call either of those gentlemen, have them take a look at it.
Yeah. So again, it's Frey, FREI at chorus.net.
That is correct, Larry.
All right, Jack. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Cameron emailed that he will become the owner of an older home and is looking at updating it and remodeling it. Would it be worth it to do it slowly over time, or is it better to do it all at once and just get it done with?
That depends on whether you've won the lottery recently. You know, I still do some home inspections for people, and I try to do mostly older homes. One thing that I do suggest to people, Larry, is live in the home for a year. Because, you know, you can look at it and you've got all kinds of ideas. Then you live in it for a year and you find out what works and what doesn't work. And then there's all kinds of things like that old pocket door really grows on you and you decide you're going to restore it instead of tearing it out. And now you don't want to rip out that wall between the kitchen and the dining room because you've really gotten used to it. So I would say take your time, you know, due diligence, find out what you're comfortable with, and then have a 5-year plan or even a 10-year plan. What do you want this to look like when you're all done? You know, we don't want to reside the house before we insulate and things like that. We want to have an idea of what we're doing as far as the mechanical system, the structural system, the cladding system, the insulation system, the vapor barrier system, the venting system, et cetera. So make a big, long list and then prioritize it, live in the house for a little while, and then whether you do it all at once or a little at a time, yeah, it's going to save some money to do it all at once because you've got this thing called mobilization cost. But sometimes you just can't afford it. I mean, sometimes things have to be spread out. And there's nothing, you know, old houses talk to us. You know, their problems become apparent and their charms become apparent really over time. I really wouldn't want to touch a house until I've lived a winter in it because, boy, you find out a lot as the seasons change. That old homes are an adventure. Look at it that way. Take a lot of notes. Have an energy test done, right? You can do that this winter. Find out how weak or how strong the thermal envelope and the air barriers are on the house. So do some research. Do some thinking. Look into your heart. Have a conversation with the house. And then next year, plan what you're going to do, whether it's going to be in one fell swoop or over the next decade. I've been in my house for 23 years. And I am going to finish varnishing that door on the second floor pretty soon.
Okay, there you go, Cameron. Thanks so much. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guest today. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And we'll get you on pretty quickly. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. Always great to have John come by. And certainly if you have a question, call in at 800-642-1234. 604-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Heidi emailed, she has a Pella casement window where the bottom of the frame is deteriorating, John. Having trouble opening and closing the window. The glass and the sill are fine. Is there any way to fix the window, or does she need to replace the whole window?
Well, generally, if it's not a real old Pella, you can get you can simply get a replacement sash. And if it's a casement window, it's really easy. It's 5 minutes to change them out. So I would talk to a local Pella dealer. If the wood is actually decayed, yeah, you can restore it. But, boy, I would just get a new sash if you can. It's just too much work to try to do all this epoxy and all this other stuff. And the window's out for 2 weeks, and then you put it back, and it doesn't fit. So Pella, Anderson, Marvin, most of these large-name companies have good dealers. Depending upon where you are, I mean, if you're, you know, sometimes up at Three Lakes or something, you can't find anybody within 100 miles. But if you're in one of the metropolitan areas, you're probably going to find a Pella dealer who is going to be real helpful and is going to be willing to order parts for you.
There you go, Heidi. Thank you for that email. Todd in De Pere, it's your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a new roof. Home about there was built in 96, has cathedral ceilings part of the house, and it's probably due for a new roof in the next couple of years. When we do put this new roof, asphalt shingling, is there anything we should be looking at or doing before the shingles are applied? Anything at all we should be looking at?
Yes, I would take a look because your cathedral ceilings. Now, is this a truss system? So that there's actually attic space between the cathedral ceiling and the roof? Or is this a situation where we have TJIs or I-joists or something so that you've got drywall on the bottom and roof sheathing on the top?
It's a truss system. There is attic space.
Good. Excellent. That makes life a lot easier. So at that point, all you want to do is you want to get a quality shingle. And you want to get a quality installer. There are a lot of good shingle manufacturers out there. My default is GAF. And GAF, if you use a GAF certified installer, you can actually get a lifetime warranty on both labor and materials. You'll pay for a little insurance policy, but if you're going to live in that house for the next 60 years, then this next roof is the only one you're ever going to have to buy. So I would take a look at that. It is not going to be the least expensive roof, but it is going to give you something with good quality. Now, take a look. If you buy any shingle, take a look at things like the wind ratings on them. You know, some shingles only have 50, 60 mile-an-hour wind ratings. Well, with climate change, you think of some of the winds we've had in Wisconsin recently. You want to get something with a really good wind rating. You want to make sure you install it in a time of year, not in December, so that things like the glue strips will melt and really bond so that you've got a good tight roof. So be very careful in selecting your contractor. Go to CertainTeed or GAF or whomever and download the installation instructions. Think about ice and water shield. Don't do the absolute minimum of 3 feet. I would come up 3 feet from the inside of your outside walls, not just 1 foot. And a good quality roofer is going to think through those things for you. But if you know all that stuff in advance before you meet the roofer, they're going to have a lot of respect for you, and they're going to treat you with care.
Yeah, all good advice. And by the way, the wind rating on shingles, what is a wind rating that you would put on your house if you were going to put it on? I mean,
The wind rating on the shingles on my house is 120.
Oh, boy, 120 miles an hour.
But, Larry, I'm never putting another roof on that house, ever.
Yeah. Todd, there you go. Thank you. Louise in Dodgeville, your turn.
Hi. I am referencing a previous caller, and your guest had spoken about an energy analysis.
Yeah.
So I was curious about, who does that or how do you get that? And then I had a comment also regarding previous caller. We've done our remodel in stages, and I'm glad that we did because our kind of taste level changed and what we wanted from the house changed. So actually, I'm kind of glad we didn't do it all at once because, like, we're different people, you know, 10 years down the road. So,
yeah.
And then we also need a new roof, but we have a cathedral ceiling with no trusses. So can you speak to that as well?
Okay, well, this is why you're already talking about an energy audit. And with a cathedral ceiling with interstitial space instead of trusses, the opportunity to improve the insulation in your ceiling is coming when you're taking that roof off. So you want to do your energy analysis in the middle of winter where they can use thermal imaging and see what your insulation value is up in those cathedral ceilings. So go to Focus on Energy. They should have a listing of people in the Dodgeville area. Select one. I always suggest doing it, you know, November, December, January, February, the coldest day possible. And look over their shoulder as they're doing the thermal imaging. You're going to understand almost immediately exactly what's going on by looking at the color in the in the camera viewfinder. You'll get a lot of good information. And if it does then make sense to add insulation either into the interstitial space or going over the top of the roof with an energy panel, which is basically foam insulation and airspace and sheathing. So there are multiple options. So let's, again, start with science. Let's start with the energy audit, and then you can decide what is going to be best for your comfort and what has a good payback for you. Make sense?
Yes. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Louise. Appreciate the call. Nancy in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Nancy.
Hello to you. I'm a neighbor's limb fell on my house roof some years ago, and I delayed in having the repairs made, and so water dripped down from the attic into one of the bedrooms, and I now have had the hole in the roof repaired, but I believe that there might be mold up there. I don't have a sense of smell, so I'm not seeing it or smelling it, but I'm thinking if it is there, is there such a thing as smoke bombs that you can light up in an enclosed space that would get rid of mold?
Mold is really an issue, and you really need a mold specialist. Unfortunately, I don't know anyone in Milwaukee, but what they're probably going to do is make a couple of holes in the wall and the ceiling, and they're going to use a little sniffer sort of thing to draw some air out, and they're going to then look for mold in that air, and I think unfortunately, you have to start with a professional. A sense of smell often tells us an awful lot about whether we've got mold or not because we'll smell this particular mustiness. Now, Nancy, how old is your house?
Built in 1943. It's Lannan stone. And I had a 20-year roof put on it about 15 years ago. And that's what got broken by the limb.
Right. Now, 1940 house, you've got a lot of air movement through the wall spaces. So I suspect things dried out fairly well, so you've got a pretty good chance of not having an issue. But the only way you're going to know for sure is it's going to be a few hundred dollars to have a mold person come in and do an air test. Now, what they may do is just say, Nancy, let's do an air test in the room. And if there's no mold in the room and if there's no smell, well, we've proved the null hypothesis. We don't have a problem. So that might be the way to start. But most of the mold professionals are very good. You want somebody who has a certain number of certificates and degrees and things. So, you know, do some checking online or in the phone book and talk to a couple people. And I talk to three people, and one of them always makes the most sense, it seems.
Okay, there you go, Nancy. Thank you very much for calling. Keith in Forest County, your turn. Hi, Keith.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I guess it still is. I have a question that was similar to the fellow who called before about Pella windows. I've got Pella windows with a little fulcrum-like or pivot point with a screw that goes into the frame, and it seems to be rotting out. I've got 22 of these windows. They're about 20 years old, and when this happens, I'll unscrew the little screw, which frankly doesn't seem long enough to, given the torque that it has to handle. I've stuffed small pieces of wood like toothpicks down in there and then sealed that off with epoxy.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to help, but I'm wondering if there's some other water problem that I might be having or something else that I could do to alleviate this issue.
Yeah, I think, Keith, that basically that is a weak point. The epoxy does work. What I would do before you put in the epoxy is put in a wood hardener, a liquid wood hardener. And you might put in a couple of coats because that's going to go down there and consolidate what may be some soft wood down there. And then epoxy after that. But I think that is probably you're on the right track there as far as a make-do. It just happens to be a weak point. Even with really good quality windows now, our wood is not as great as it used to be, and you will get some decay.
Keith, thank you so much. Good luck with that. Appreciate it. John Freiberger, our guest, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. But you could call right now if you want. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking home improvement on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. He comes by every couple of months to address your home improvement concerns, and I hope you'll join in with your home improvement questions. All our lines are filled. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's get right back to the phones, John, and go to Margaret in Milwaukee. Margaret, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about the maintenance of fake Lannan stone. Our house was built in 1917, and it's actually stucco, but it was carved and dyed to look like Lannan stone. And okay. Over the years, little cracks have appeared, and someone used a white caulk. So our house looks like a roadmap of little tiny white lines. And I'm wondering how I can disguise them without painting the whole house.
Now, you said this was fake Lannan stone? You mean not an artificial stone, but is it thin sawn Lannan stone?
No, it's stucco. And then it was printed, like almost like a concrete stamp.
Oh, okay. But is it all one color, all sort of a tannish color?
No, that's the problem.
Okay, it's that old multi. Yep, I remember that stuff. Yeah, that was probably installed in the late 40s or early 50s over something that was originally there.
And then the epoxy or whatever it was that adds.
Well, because it cracks because it's basically, because the stuff that was put on your house, Margaret, probably had a lot of Portland cement in it instead of lime. So it cracked it moved with temperature and humidity. You're going to have to call a specialist over there. And unfortunately, in Milwaukee, I don't know anyone. But you know, what you've got there is if you talk to a stucco specialist, there are ways of repairing that. It is really labor intensive. We've got to get all the old caulk out, and then they have to grout the cracks, and then they recolorize everything with the surface coating, and it's a lot of work. So I would start with call a couple masons and call one or two old fashioned stucco guys and see if they'll look at it. And they may say, Margaret, we got a better solution for you. We're going to parge over the whole thing with new stucco or something like that. But what you've got a difficult product that's hard to work with. It was a tough product, but if the house moved at all and it cracked, it was really a problem because it wasn't self-healing like the old-fashioned lime stucco was. So you're going to have to get some professional advice over in Milwaukee from a couple of old-timers.
Yeah, that's your best bet, Margaret. Thank you so much for calling, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Bill in Ferryville, turn to you next. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, what can we do for you?
My wife and I are restoring an old house in Ferryville, pretty much neglected, and in some ways it's a good thing. It's kind of not much has changed there since the 1940s. The original house was built in 1860, and then there was a remodel on record for 1940. And it needs everything. You know, it needs insulation and a lot of painting and fix-up, but the plaster's good, and the floors are good. And on the window, the question is on the windows. We decided to keep the original double-hung windows wherever mm-hmm. possible, and I would say it's maybe 75% of the windows are good. And we've invested in these steel double-track with a screen storm windows we're picking up in Lansing, and they're painted black, so they kind of replicate the old black storm window and screen, the wooden type.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting that sort of outer defense installed and then fixing up the interior window. And I wonder what you recommend for weather stripping that old style sash. And by the way, there's no weights. These are the locks with those little pin loaded,
right,
spring loaded pins.
Mm-hmm.
That's how dated the windows are.
Yeah.
So I wonder what you recommend for weather stripping those, where you can get a good line of product for that. Mm-hmm. And also, the windows that can't be repaired, what style replacement window would you get if you want to keep both the interior and exterior trim and maintain that and just get a new inside window?
Sure. Well, I have exactly the same window in my house from the 1850s, and what I use is brass weather stripping, which I got at the local hardware store. And the weather stripping is maybe an inch and an eighth wide. It's got usually like three little grooves in it, and it's sort of sprung. And you have to put it in with these little brass nails, and it's you need a tweezers and a small hammer to do it. But what's nice about it is, Bill, unless the sashes are really loose, by the time you put the sprung brass in there, the sashes will go up and down and stay up just because of the friction. So I would start at the local hardware store, and this stuff comes in rolls, and you just cut it with the tin snips and put it in. So I would try that first. As far as historic windows, is everything gone? The jams are gone? Basically, we're looking at entire window replacement or just sash?
No, the jams are all there, and the interior sills in some cases are in good shape. The exterior sills are being replaced
mm-hmm.
here and there, but I just keep hearing about like a pocket window, you know, where we can kind of get like a black aluminum clad window that will fit in that space mm-hmm. and look the part, you know, and yet we can keep our 4-inch exterior trim mm-hmm. and then the interior trim that we have without altering that too much.
Well, you might check and see if somebody is willing to build some sashes for you, because there are people out there that do it. There are some Amish shops that will do old fashioned style and rail it's not a dovetail at the corners, but you know they fit together like fingers. That might be the least expensive. Otherwise, I'm not sure exactly. I always worry about inserting new windows into old windows. Mm-hmm. What's really going to work? What's it going to look like? Are we going to have a lot of air leaks? If you're replacing the entire window, my go-to is usually the Marvin Historic series. They are expensive, but they can match just about anything. So maybe start looking at a custom shop and see if they can simply build you some sashes. My guess is the upper sashes are probably fine. Or if nothing else, you make the upper sashes fixed sashes, and you just make new lower sashes so that they will go up and down and operate for you. That, mm-hmm. considering the cost of windows today, Bill, that may be the way to go.
Yeah, makes sense. Bill, good luck. Thank you for calling. Dan in Harshaw, up to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
No problem. But I got one for you.
Okay.
I've got some thermopane windows here in my house. They're 5.5 years old. The whole house is 5.5 years old. It's a manufactured home. And I assume that the house is settling on the foundation because I hear these pow, like a .22 off in the background. But I do have some thermopane windows on two of the sliding doors. I assume the seals are broken because it's very foggy inside the thermopane.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking I'm going to have to replace them, but I'm hesitant to do so because I'm still getting these gunshots going off in here, and I think the house is settling and breaking the seals. Yep. What's your take on that?
Well, I have yet to see a manufactured home that was set correctly on a foundation. I would get a home inspector to come in and do a home inspection for you of those elements. You know, home inspection doesn't have to check all the electrical and things. They can come in and do whatever you want. So go to the website of the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors, which is wahi.something or other, might even be .org, and then look for people that are in your area, and then you can email them and say, do you know about manufactured homes? Can you tell whether they are set correctly on the foundation? Is the beam in the center correct? We've found them set high. We've found them where they're not really on the foundation. We found them overhanging. We've found just a mess with manufactured and modular houses. So I would start with a home inspector. They may look at a couple things and say, look, we've got minimal shimming in a couple places where things don't fit. We can reshim those things. We may have to slurry in some concrete. We may have to do this, do that. At that point, look at the quality of the doors you have. They're probably not great. You may want to replace the entire door and jam system with something that is much more efficient than what you have. But start with a home inspector, and they, if you get the right man or woman, they are going to have the knowledge to look at it and tell you if this house is set correctly. These houses should not move unless they're set wrong on the foundation or if the center columns are too high. I mean, they're built to go down the road at 70 miles an hour into a 30-mile-an-hour wind, aren't they, Dan? So usually the boxes are really quite strong, but things get torqued because of bad situation, and that can be causing these gunshots on you.
Yeah. So take a look. Get yourself an inspector and take a look at – have that person take a look at it, Dan. Thank you very much for calling. Mark in Wauwatosa.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a second home in northern Indiana outside Fort Wayne. It's an old church built 1914, 2,000 square foot, cathedral ceilings, no second floor, a brick on the outside, book tile on the inside with plaster and lath over it.
Mm-hmm.
I call it book tile. I don't think you can insulate it, really. Glass window walls on the east, south, west faces, 11 foot by 19 foot Gothic arch. I've got a bunch of, twin wall polycarbonate plastic to put over mm-hmm. the stained glass windows in place of the existing single pane glass. So I want to try to keep them warm and protect them from baseballs and such.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a problem. And I want to insulate those walls and not have a dew point problem. I'm thinking possibly I bought a truckload of 8-inch EPS foam off a contractor. They don't need those sheets. And I'm thinking exterior insulated shutters. That's going to be quite a project, but over the windows so that they can open and provide some shading. It's going to have to be quite a structure for that. And maybe on the outside of the building, maybe furring strips and fasten the foam to furring strips and maybe do they call it EFAS. They spray stucco on it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just wondering, you probably can't put the foam on the inside, but it'd be a dew point problem with those walls, the structure
yeah.
getting.
Yeah, you're going to have, you really need to get a thorough, not just an energy analyst, but somebody's going to have to do Wolf curves for you, and you're probably going to have to talk to an architect that knows thermal design. Now, you said this has a brick exterior, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yep. There's no end of trouble with EIFS. I have not seen an EIFS installation yet that hasn't leaked at some point. Now, the back drained ones, fine. They drain, but do we want to put a back drain EIF system over brick? I don't think so. So you really need some good professional help on this to try to determine what is really possible and how to control the dew point. Now, the good thing is that this is a second home. You're probably not generating a whole lot of moisture, and you've got a tremendous cubic volume in there. But that's the sort of thing that you really are going to have to go to an architect who has some specialization in thermal envelope, interior air quality management, et cetera, so they can help you. It's going to cost you a couple $1,000. But whatever you do on that, you're going to be throwing a lot of money at it. And I would certainly start getting a good professional analysis before I touch that building.
Yeah, that's very good advice. Mark, thank you very much. Good luck. Let us know how that works out. Love to hear a success story, hopefully, down the road. Norman in Wausau, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks for taking my call, Larry, and your excellent home advisor there. We have a 20-some-year-old Mitsubishi cell air interchanger, and my wife says it doesn't seem to be working right anymore. Do you get a whole unit for that, or you get a new cell for it, or a new motor, or how? What's the best way to handle that?
Well, they really do need annual maintenance. And there's a filter on that system. And plus, the early Mitsubishis, you did have some core failures, and you can just replace the core. So I would just talk to a local HVAC person up there in Wausau. There should be a whole bunch of them that have worked on and have your know which model number it is. It's right on the machine. It's probably on the compressor unit outside. And you should be able to get the data manufacturer lower right on the older Mitsubishis, the model number, the everything else that you need to talk to somebody. And they may have to come and take a look at it. And if you've never replaced that core, I'd be real surprised if that core was still good.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think you can do that rather than replace the entire machine.
Good luck, Norman. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's turn to Sue in Mequon next. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I was wondering John's opinion on putting a metal roof over asphalt shingles, or if you need to remove that underlying roof.
You need to remove the underlying roof. There are guys out there who will do it for you, but it leads to no end of problems. The other thing that you need to do is you need to analyze the structure of your roof. How old is your house, Sue?
This is actually my neighbor's garage, and I was just kind of hearing what they were doing, and it seemed kind of odd to me.
Oh, okay. So, well, it's a garage, so that is probably an inexpensive ag-type one with exposed fasteners. It's not one of the – it's not a standing
right.
seam
yeah.
or
interlock.
Yeah, so they're – the thing about those cheap roofs is you can take, if there's a problem, you can take them off, remove the asphalt shingles, put them back on. So big difference between a garage and a house and the different type of roofs. Expensive metal roofs, you really have to approach cautiously. But on a garage, it's all going to work.
Okay.
And if not, you unscrew it and you fix it and you put it back on.
Thank you, Sue. Manny emailed to ask if you recommend seamless steel siding in this climate and on old houses, and do you recommend insulating stud bays, or does this create moisture or other problems?
The steel siding depends upon the length. Once we get beyond 12 to 16 feet, we can end up with problems with oil canning. The other thing we have to be careful of is we've got to make sure that our studs and our sheathing are really in good shape, and we've got to, that there's a plane. There's no ripples and wandering or bows in the wall because it will telegraph right through the steel. You know, the nice thing about the vinyl is you can hide a whole lot of stuff. With steel, you really can't. When you're talking, we don't know much about these walls. I've mentioned earlier that whenever we insulate a wall, we have to be careful about our vapor situations. We don't get condensation inside. We can use vapor-type paint. I would probably want to talk to somebody locally in that area that knows something, perhaps a energy analyst that you would find on Focus on Energy. But proceed a little bit cautiously. Do some research so that you don't get into a situation that you're going to regret.
Claudia in Gurnee emailed, her windows have deteriorating adhesive-backed foam. So the foam, she wonders if she should replace it. So she's emailed her. Her windows have deteriorating adhesive-backed foam. Should she replace it, or is there a better product? I'm trying to visualize.
I'm having the same problem you are. I'm not sure where this foam is located. Is this a cushion when you close the sash, or?
I think that's what I'm guessing.
Foam sounds odd. Foam holds moisture because it's porous. Yeah, I'm don't think we can answer that one. Enough information.
No, I'm at a loss there too. I'm not quite sure. Somebody wondered about selecting a good home inspector. What should you look for?
Well, first thing, you want to see that they're actually making an investment. So they've joined the American Society of Home Inspectors, ASHI, in Wisconsin. They've joined the Wisconsin Association of Home Inspectors or the Illinois Association of Home Inspectors. So they're actually spending an extra couple of $100 a year to be a member of a professional organization. The most professional organizations, like WAHI, has like 6 or 7 chapters in the state of Wisconsin. Almost all of them have monthly meetings. They have monthly education. So if you go to somebody who's a member of WAHI, or if it's a different state, that state, or ASHI, those people are most likely better educated and a little bit more current than somebody who has no professional affiliation. So again, go to the WAHI website. If you're not in Wisconsin, or you can't find exactly whom you want on WAHI, go to ASHI and take a look at who is there and interview them.
Yeah, why not? Makes good sense. And on that note, we are out of time, John. It's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. And you're back. I'm trying to think of the date here. I don't have the date, but it's in a couple of months.
In a couple of months.
You will be back. John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, more than 4 decades of home improvement and experience, and is the owner of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. Great to have him with us, and he will be back in 2 months, and we'll do this all over again. I should mention, by way of full disclosure, Freiberger Consulting is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors, so we appreciate that as well. As we look ahead to tomorrow, it's Garden Talk time. My gosh, the week has flown by. We focus on adding fragrance and healing elements to your garden. And our guest is Mark Dwyer, and Mark knows a lot about that, so it's going to be a lot of fun. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.